Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
This challenged, of course, the Fed's mission, which by law is stable prices and maximizing of employment.
At the recent Midwest Ag Conference, President and CEO of the Federal Reserve Board of Chicago, Austin Goolsbee.
And that's one of the things that made it hard to be a central banker is those things began to diverge in a bit of a stagflationary way. It's the thing that also made it hard to be in agriculture, that the supply chain and the inputs kind of broke the historical precedent. Now, every farm operation, of course, needs the inputs to function, but there have been major structural changes to input markets that have made this much more challenging.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We had our annual fall meeting, of course, with our sister organization, the U.S. Wheat Associates in Phoenix, Arizona.
Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
That's really where we finalized our policy resolution process. We also came together and started taking nominations for our board members that want to run for NOG office, and had several excellent speakers, not only from across the industry, whether it be from Bayer and Syngenta, and then also going down to our joint trade committees and our joint breeding committees that we share with U.S. Wheat, and really just talked about a lot of the issues, whether it's input cost or regulatory pressures that are currently facing our wheat growers. And then, of course, we're continuing to look at the 2024-25 farm bill and what our priorities are as, you know, times keep a changing, and we need to make sure that our priorities that we set at the beginning of this discussion, you know, 2 years ago, are still the main priorities for our wheat growers. And we finalized most of that, and we'll be hitting the hill again in January during our annual meeting. So it was an excellent meeting, had well attended, and it was good to be together with the industry.
A lot of federal priorities, but the big one, funding the government.
And we've got 10 days of funding left in the government. So there's the biggest issue of, can we pass a continuing resolution to just to keep the government open? But the biggest glaring thing that we are missing in the agriculture community is we still do not have a farm bill, and we extended it from September of 2023 to September of 2024. And here we are in December, about to end the 118th Congress, still without a farm bill. And because of where we are in the year and other priorities, we're going to end up extending this farm bill again, but hopefully with some type of economic assistance package on it due to the low commodity prices and the downward turn that we've seen in the agriculture industry.
At this point, though, all row crop producers are hurting.
USDA is even predicting lower net farm income starting in 2025, could be as high as 18 to 22% lower than what we're currently seeing right now. And of course, you know, inflation is a thing that happens and cost of production continues to go up. But when cost of production goes up, it never seems to come back down. And so as commodity prices continue to drop, we're definitely looking at a stressed farm economy, definitely in the row crops and with our U.S. wheat growers. So that's why we've been working so hard. I've literally been on the phone 4 or 5 nights over the weekend up until 10 o'clock at night, talking to both the House and Senate Agriculture Committee of trying to bring some type of economic relief package to the farm bill extension that'll have to be attached to the only must-pass bill that we still have left, which is the continuing resolution to fund the government.
A major challenge, a narrow margin, and factions in the Republican Party.
It was definitely an obstacle this Congress. And honestly, I don't see it getting any better with the House of Representatives is still going to have an extremely narrow majority for the Republicans. And depending on if President Trump picks any more House members to be a member of his administration, it can make that margin even closer. And so that is something that we definitely have to take in consideration. And, you know, Speaker Johnson wants to be the speaker again, and passing bills with a majority of Democrat support, which happened several times this year on must pass bills that were good for the country. Many in his party don't appreciate that. So there's just a lot of political obstacles out there that will not only be renewed, but I think even more intense starting in the next 119th Congress in January.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We're very proud of the analysis and work we do about the ag economy and food production. It's a key part of the 7th District.
At the Chicago Federal Reserve's 2024 Midwest Ag Conference, Austin Goolsbee, President and CEO of the Federal Reserve Board of Chicago.
I didn't know we were the Napa Valley of ginseng, but I did know we were the Napa Valley of corn, soybeans, and hogs, that the 7th District, we're number one in all of those. We're 44% of the entire nation's corn for grain, 42% of soybeans, 49% of hogs and pigs, 25% of all milk, Wisconsin number one cheese producer. When I go to the FOMC meetings, I always like to bring a tales from the 7th District. This ginseng is going to go on there. But others, where the Butterball Hotline is in Naperville. That's right out right down the street. And 90%, one of the years, was it last year? The FOMC meeting itself was on Halloween. And I found out that in a 100-mile radius around Peoria, 90% of the edible pumpkins of the United States are grown. So I told all the other banks, I was like, none of you, there wouldn't even be a Halloween if it wasn't for the 7th District. Maybe I'll just say a couple of words about the lay of the land, as it were, on the economy and on agriculture. And the overriding theme that we've been dealing with at the Fed when setting interest rates is really very much in that closing theme of the previous panel, which is, wow, this looks so different from normal times. And if you look back over the last 20 years or 40 years or something, this 5-year period is really perplexing, and it's been a challenge. The economy-wide phenomenon, we had a bunch of rules of thumb, I would describe it, of what do you do to interest rates when you see X, Y, or Z happen in the economy? And most of those were rooted in the Fed has one tool. It can raise the rates, lower the rates, but basically tightening and loosening is all it can do. And it does that on interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy. And those tend to be the most cyclical. So it usually works. When demand is high and the economy is overheating, it cools down the economy by raising the interest rate, and consumer durables and construction and housing and business investment, those are the things that slow down because they're interest rate sensitive. We then go into this COVID time where we have a deep recession that has nothing to do with any cyclical sector. It has to do with people not getting elective surgery and not going out to eat and not being able to go to a football game and stuff like that. Those services aren't interest rate sensitive at all, as best we can tell. Nobody says, should we go to the dentist? I don't know. What's the interest rate? It's not like a mortgage. It's not like a car financing. And on the supply side of the economy, the input side facing everyone, not just agriculture, that has been totally different, that we've had big negative supply shocks that led a lot of the economic activity and drove a lot of the cost inflation.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
While this is a 15 billion gallon industry, we now recognize that we're not going to have battery powered planes and ships. We're not going to have hydrogen powered planes and ships for quite some time. And so the world needs this industry to help it create a low carbon intensity marine and jet fuel, sustainable aviation fuel.
Earlier this year, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, on an interim final rule setting technical guidelines for climate-smart ag crops used as biofuel feedstocks.
The first step in that process was to ensure that the first choices made in this area by the Treasury Department with reference to 40B would for the first time recognize agriculture's capacity to be part of the solution. Now, I know that not everybody was happy with the bundling of all of the cover crops and nutrient management and things of that nature that were in the 40B guidance, but it was an effort simply to introduce the world to the fact that agriculture can make a difference, that ethanol can make a difference, that ethanol and crop production are now in a way where we can prove and establish that, in fact, it can be part of the solution. That was a really important thing to do, and it was also important to correct the mistaken science about indirect land use that had been guiding some decision-making in the past. Now we get to 45Z. Now, the reality is nobody's going to use 40B because the next year or two, not much ethanol and not much sustainable aviation fuel is going to be actually produced in this country. Maybe 10 million gallons down in Georgia. But the reality is the real game here is 45Z. We recognize that. So the first order of business was to reach out to all of you and to the country and say, okay, if we're going to do this for 45Z, how should we do it? So we made a request for information. We received 260 comments. Most of them were in favor. Most of them encouraged participation by agriculture. Most of them suggested that there are indeed ways to quantify carbon reduction from various things occurring on the farm or in ethanol facilities or in relationship to carbon capture and storage. We saw a broad array of support from farmers, from the ethanol industry and others. And we even saw environmental groups and conservation groups recognize the significant environmental opportunity that ethanol can present. So we're taking that information. We're working with our scientists and our chief economists, and we are formulating a rule that will essentially define a bit more, with a bit more specificity, what we can do and are doing that will make a difference. And the idea behind this rule would be integrating it into the GREET model so that the calculation can be made, so that the farm contribution and the ethanol contribution can help lower that score and get it below the magic 50 level, that would allow fuel made from ethanol to be competitive and to qualify for these tax credits. Our goal is to make sure that we make the case to the federal interagency process that's going to formulate all of this. We make the case that there are a number of crops, corn, soybeans, obviously two of them, but not necessarily the only two, that can be beneficial, and that there are specific individual actions that are being taken on farms and groups of actions that can make a difference and ought to be included. In other words, not simply requiring a bundling of actions, but giving farmers flexibility and choice to choose from a menu of activities and actions.
But still no guidance from IRS. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Certainly our federal crop insurance, you can't do a farm bill without that.
Mark McCarg is president of the Nebraska Farm Bureau.
We know that, you know, the weather patterns that we're in currently now are just probably more frequent, more severe. And so having a federal crop insurance program is really, really, really important. An extension's okay, but we really do need to do a permanent five-year bill. Hopefully we can maybe pick that conversation up sometime in February.
Is trade on the radar?
Probably one of the most asked questions of me is if our President-elect Trump comes in, actually really starts doing significant tariff conversations or actually putting tariffs in. One of the things that we know that when we put a tariff in on another country, one of the things that they will do is retaliate. And so that's what we're most concerned about, which makes our products less attractive around the world. So we know that last time he certainly did that. Soybeans went to $8, but he came in with some kind of relief and some aid to kind of balance that out. So the question is, really, if we get back into that situation, are there going to be dollars to ensure that agriculture comes out okay? We don't quite frankly know that, you know, what that's going to happen. But in Nebraska, almost a third of our products are exported, $10 billion out of $30 billion that we produce in ag products. And so any type of tariff or any type of disruption probably affects Nebraska about as much as any state in the country.
But Nebraska is proactive when it comes to trade.
Nebraska does a really, really great job of actually touting our products. I've been on a number of trade missions with a number of the different groups that you have mentioned. This particular trip was actually sponsored by the British Embassy, and we went over to the UK, and really it was about forming relationships between the U.S. and the UK, but certainly in Nebraska as well. Nebraska has a really great beef brand over in the UK. They like our beef, and so I would say it's pretty close to a branded product. But we also talked about a number of different things, whether it be ethanol sales going into the UK or just a number of products, again, where they import about 40% of their food. It's important that we continue to have a conversation, and quite frankly, a free trade agreement with the UK would be a good start to this administration. And so we are encouraging that, and a lot of times it just takes those relationships to move that conversation forward.
What do farmers there say about Brexit?
We heard pretty candidly that, you know, there was a risk going through Brexit and actually separating from the EU. And they were concerned that if they were going to get drugged back into the same same regulatory regime, but they're going to get back into the same types of trading relationships or limited trading relationships, they were wondering out loud with us, was it worth it? And they really want to make an attempt to be a significant player on their own. And that's going slow, it sounds like. And I think there's some frustration that they haven't had the ability to move forward quite as fast as they would want.
What's on the horizon?
Certainly the trade conversation is going to be significant. Again, we didn't move the ball significantly on property tax relief here in Nebraska. So that will be a topic of conversation. But, you know, just the whole conversation relative to being in the EU, looking at the restraints that they have, we need to ensure that Nebraska producers just don't have any significant barriers that are in place that stops them from really doing what we could do well as just producing food. And I would say fiber and fuel fall into that category. And we have a lot of great companies that are looking at Nebraska to site here for their ag processing, and that would be great for us. And so we'll be working with those companies to try to figure out where the best place for them to come to Nebraska would be. We're going to have some probably zoning conversations, some conversations around energy use as well, and how do we prioritize that. So that's a couple of things that we'll be looking at coming in 2025.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The health of the agriculture sector remains a vital component of the 7th District economy, and people don't realize nearly 30% of all U.S. agricultural banks are headquartered here in the 7th District.
At the recent Midwest Ag Conference, President and CEO of the Federal Reserve Board of Chicago, Austin Goolsbee.
One of the big themes of the last couple of years in the wider economy, I have argued they should learn from the agriculture sector, which is dealing with productivity growth. Okay, so our 7th District corn and soybean harvest this year is on track to be the largest ever in history. Despite widespread droughts in the summer and the fall, the ultimate crop turned out amazing. And it tells really an interesting story about productivity growth in the farm sector. David sent me the numbers. In 1969, as an example, corn acres produced right around 100 bushels per acre on average. This year, that will be 209 bushels per acre. So it's literally more than doubled in a single lifetime, the productive capacity of our farmland. And that rise of productivity growth has major implications if writ over the whole economy for what should happen to monetary policy. Because the faster grows productivity, the faster we can grow without inflation, the more wages can grow higher than prices. We all know that inflation got well too high, and food above all, really. The inflation rate on food peaked at over 11% in 2022. But by October of this year, the inflation rate was, for the last 12 months, was literally 2.1%. So essentially exactly at the 2% target. Now, the only thing is that doesn't make anybody feel better. If I talk to my mom, A, it doesn't make her feel better when I say we mostly look at core inflation, so we don't even look at food and energy prices. And she's like, what do you mean you don't look at food and energy prices? But it's the level of prices that a bunch of people see. So even if we got inflation back to growing at 2% and all the central bankers of the world said, what a success, people still go out and look and say, eggs cost what? Milk costs what? And so we're still going to have to deal with the issue about the price level. Most of the cost, as you know, from the food comes after the products leave the farms. The farm share of the food dollar is below 15 cents. This year, the crop prices themselves are down further from the 2022 levels, though those were near record levels. Based on the most recent price data, corn and soybean revenues are projected to drop between 7 and 8% from 2023. So while those declines aren't as large as last year's double-digit decreases, they're still going to be a challenging circumstance. So where does that leave us on the economy? I basically think in agriculture, after several strong years, it has been less profitable and more challenging lately, which has naturally led to this renewed focus on minimizing input costs and making the supply chain as efficient as possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Just talking about our national security, and that's one of those issues that I think a lot of Americans need to stop and pause for a minute and really realize the threats that we have and the insecurities that we have.
South Dakota governor and now nominee for Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem.
I'm a farmer and a rancher and have spent my life, you know, raising food to feed this country and to feed the world. We had a very large operation when I was younger. My dad was killed in an accident when I was young, and I ended up quitting college and taking over our businesses. But I've worked on food policy for 30 years, and I watched over those last 30 years as China systematically came in. And first they started buying up our chemical companies in the United States. Then they started buying up our seed and fertilizer companies. Then we saw America for a period of time embrace selling citizenship to the United States for investment in our processing facilities. The vast majority of our processing facilities and meatpacking plants are owned by Chinese companies now and people that are affiliated with the CCP. Now we have seen them come in. They've manipulated their currency. They've stolen our genetics and our IP. And now we're watching them buy our land and completing that full circle of our food production in the United States. China has had a 1,000 years plan for world domination. They've been trying to take out the United States of America for hundreds of years. For the last 200 years, we have been a threat to them ever since we were established because we were so different in the experiment that our founders gave us. They gave us the most wonderful experiment in the history of the world by giving us this republic. And it was so different. And China has seen us as we rose to be the world's power as a threat to them. And they have a long-term plan to take us out, and they will make their people suffer in order to get that plan complete. If we think a pandemic was scary, wait until they control our food supply. And wait until you go to the grocery store and you realize you can't get food to feed your family because China's decided that you can't get your food. Did you know that they own quite a bit of our ports in the United States? The LA port that you hear Newsom bragging about all the time, it's 90% owned by Chinese companies and Chinese officials. They have started hoarding their shipping containers in China. Everything in this world that gets shipped across the ocean goes in a shipping container, doesn't it? Why do you think that they're keeping the shipping containers so that we don't have access to them?
Tudor Dixon was the Republican candidate in the 2022 election for Michigan governor and is a political commentator.
I have a little bit different experience than the governor because I come from the manufacturing world. So I saw it from what they did to the manufacturing world. And I saw foundry after foundry after foundry close because the Chinese were coming in offering the lowest prices and they were pirating all same thing, stealing our technology. And I will tell you today, there are not many people who come out of college and say, I would love to start a steel foundry. It's kind of a generational thing, sort of something that gets passed down, same as farms. When people come out of college, they don't say, man, I'd really like to start up a big dairy farm. It just doesn't happen today. They are generational businesses that get passed down from family to family, from father to son, from mother to daughter. These, once they're gone, they don't come back. No one starts them up again. And so when you hear her talking about food security and making sure that we have enough food to feed this country, what do you think the Chinese are doing buying up our land? They're weakening us. And a weak America cannot protect ourselves from a Chinese takeover. These are serious subjects. We're here, folks. The people who think this is out, way out in the future, this 100-year plan of China, we're on year like 85. They've already gotten this far. They have the largest navy in the world. A lot of people don't know that. China is very powerful.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Only one change in USDA's December domestic soybean balance sheet. A 60-cent month-over-month decrease in the season-ending average price, now at $10.20 a bushel. World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekinowski says that is despite strong demand in the export market for soybean oil.
We raised our soybean oil export forecast this month by 500 million pounds. We're at over 1.1 billion pounds of soybean oil exports forecast. Considerable increase year over year.
Meanwhile, a boost in world soybean production in December is attributed primarily to a rise in Argentinian bean production forecast.
The change we made for Argentina this month, million ton increase, reflects higher area expectations. About 50% of that crop is planted at this point. So we're expecting higher area in Argentina as well as in Bolivia.
As well as an adjustment up in soybean production in Canada. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.